Well, we don't exist in a vacuum, right? So corporations have already poisoned the democratic process. And to not step in and rectify that poisoning is to allow for individual agents to control the collective complex adaptive system in the service of their own particular corporate interests. And I think, to simply break companies up, that's a pretty minimal intervention. It behooves the competitive processes that are inherent to any capitalist system that is functioning as it should and generating innovative ecology for entrepreneurs and the like. So to act in this case is counterintuitively not an attempt to control the uncontrollable from the bird's eye view, but rather to allow emergence to take place from the bottom up.
We were talking about the. I had tweeted about how humans, our main superpower is that we get things wrong. If you look at a goat, that goat basically gets everything within its world right. It just picks at the food, it eats the food, and it does all of those small little details extremely right, doesn't get it wrong. Whereas human beings get everything wrong because we have this ability to virtualize our imaginations and share our imaginations with other people and come up with crazy theories that are totally abstracted away from the reality in which we all live. And in that process, we get things wrong. We get all things wrong, basically, most things wrong. But in that process, we find out what's right and what works. And, we develop these technologies that were long periods of getting things wrong.
I responded viscerally to the tweet you put out about that because I really feel like that is at the heart of how complex adaptive systems work. It kind of reminded me of just having a kind of a loose hand on the tiller if you're steering a boat. We sort of veer left and right, but in the end we sort of find that on the fastest trade route to India in doing so. And I think that's absolutely true. I think it stems from a couple of things. One is people are biologically and evolutionarily predisposed to play status games. There's Will Storr's book, Status Games. It really encapsulates that notion that there's not much in the way of financial status on offer at present for our generation. However, there are other forms of status that one can gain. You can get really, really jacked, you can really work out your arms and never touch your legs, but wear pants all the time. You can virtue signal like hell on these platforms. The more psychotic your anger and the harder you cancel someone for saying something rather benign, the
The
more
more
of a
status
signal,
points you get.
exactly, the more of a signal it is to your tribe. So it is sort of this, that's why I started by saying we're kind of ill-suited for the technology that we're swimming in, with how socially dependent we are on sort of peer affirmation. So we end up being the loudest, the loudest marble in the empty glass, and playing those status games. Things just kind of change parabolically when you start bringing in silicon chips. So.
The status game is interesting related to that discussion of getting things wrong and eventually getting things right. I think both of us share the understanding that the future is obscured crazily, that prediction, that science might be able to predict small trends and a few things that it is predictive in some senses, but it's not predictive in the whole understanding of what's going to happen. And then so much of social dynamics and that those statics again rely on who gets what right. And but it's well kind of because it's who gets what's right according to what other people think will know what other people in the tribe think is right.
Exactly. That's
Yeah.
that, and that's a distinction. It's the Keynesian beauty contest, right? It's the answer is not what's the best stock. The answer is what
What
does
do other
everyone
people
else
think?
think the best stock is?
Yeah.
I prefer that metaphor as opposed to the pretty lady because I don't want to get canceled myself. But we're all dependent on some kind of social confirmation. I think getting things wrong today, the utility of it is far diminished because of the fact that we have this sea of information, this inundation.
So it's about making the right mistakes and then learning the right lessons from those mistakes.
100%. Yeah, 100%. But it's the problem is that as a culture, as a human culture, we're not even capable of reaching kind of ground truth at this point. So a mistake, you know, Jim Cramer makes 100 wrong guesses per episode of his Mad Money.
But he's still got a platform.
But he's rich as hell, you know, and there are people, there's probably a guy out there right now that's screaming, he's never been wrong.
We no longer live in a 100 person tribe where gossip could reign supreme in holding people accountable for prior statements made and for the inaccuracy of said statements. We no longer live in that kind of an environment. Instead, information is fractured and we're inundated with it, and everyone is sort of able to cobble together piecemeal their own reality tunnel from these various sources. So gossip was a highly efficacious enforcement mechanism for promoting humility and accountability for, you know, much of early human history.
And then we had the rise of mythology, in my opinion, you know, with the Bible. And I don't mean that cruelly.
You're not throwing shade.
Yeah, I'm not throwing shade. I'm just saying money is a myth. You know, any narrative. And then you have collective belief, and that was drawing people together. But now it just seems the splintering of society. To me, it's that crazy confluence we mentioned, which is we have the social platforms, we have the steroids already in place, we've had them for a long time,
and then on top of that, we have a cohort of the population, again, millennials sharing much of that title, who are disenfranchised, frankly, by a decade or so of really ill-conceived monetary policy that suppressed interest rates for far longer than they needed to be suppressed in order to create this wealth effect. And what that did in turn was keep wealth unevenly distributed across the populace and very much in the hands of, it's not a value judgment, but mostly baby boomers, and now Gen X is rising very quickly. I think there's that cohort that has been disenfranchised to some degree feels like they need to gain synthetic status, and this massive injection of capital via low interest rates and the reduced cost of borrowing for those who need it the least has produced a society in which these, I want to say younger, although I've got gray hair, we're in our prime working years, and there's a lot of frustration. So I think, you know, Twitter and these social media platforms, I think there's an undercurrent of frustration and a desire for more synthetic status, status gained via, you know, virtue signaling and sharing really, you know, extreme beliefs on either side of any given issue. And I think it encourages a disbelief in the Socratic search for truth, a disbelief in productive discourse between parties that disagree without having conversation that is not emotionally charged and where status is not pinned to the outcome of that discussion. It's impossible to iterate or find any truth via the discussion between two individuals. You know, the Socratic method is not effective in today's society because of this kind of backdrop and people optimizing for clicks as opposed to, you know, having nuanced ideas and sharing them and you know, giving the other person the respect to understand their nuanced ideas and figure out, you know, what's the best path forward.
So there's relationship between funny money and the truth. That's the thing I wanted to talk about, the establishing ground truth, and why when you inject a couple trillion into the economy, it becomes much more difficult to establish ground truth. But yeah, I think we have to go back to the kind of ultimate generative question: is there an actual ground truth?
Yes, right. It's a good point. It's a good point. And that's why I accidentally and did not mean it pejoratively used the term myths earlier when describing a secular society that we sort of used to have. Belief in a common myth, belief in a common base reality, even if there is no base reality. And if there is one, we sure as hell aren't going to figure it out.
Stuart and I then went on a brief tangent, albeit an interesting one, in which we discussed how we both feel about, you know, sort of theological issues and the nature of the universe. But eventually, Stuart brought us back, as he does, to the discussion at hand and said something very incisive, which is that in an increasingly secular society, it seems as if many of the very rich are seeking to become these sort of present day deities in themselves, in and of themselves, sort of seeking ultra longevity and things of that nature.
So people are going for that sort of that deity, that kind of deity image. And guess what? Those guys are so far removed from where we are. And this is part of the will store status game. Once you have sufficient distance from a given person,
post economic,
they just become sort of a meme in your head. They're not someone that you're jealous of, or you know, you want to one up your neighbor. You know, because he's got the blue Corvette in the newer year. You know, to get to the heart of the point, there, you're totally right that in a society in which you take away God and your response is, that's okay, the market's got you.
The market has got you.
That is a recipe for what we now have. There's an emptiness, the opiate crisis. None of these things are in a vacuum. It's this escapism. You know, the drug use is part of that. And the callousness of the haves towards the have-nots, they're running things very close to the edge in terms of, you know, allowing the whole system to collapse, and then they've got nothing either.
Well, and their underlying, let's call it theology, is that the system is collapsing already. So why not get mine?
Yeah, exactly. It's the last inning of the tragedy of the commons for them, except they're the only ones with the keys to the commons. And
interesting.
So they're looting the shit out of it.
And there's that other thing too, which you had mentioned in terms of us, our distance from them is so great, but then their distance from us is so great as well.
The fact of the matter is, at least from my humble perspective, you know, most of us just sort of passively accept this idea that, you know, things are going to be framed to us in a certain way, and we accept things as opposed to being reality bound. Everything is sort of frame bound. It's bound by it's bound by how that is presented to us. It's bound by all of these different this confluence of exogenous factors that shapes how we think about things. And I think our own genetics, and I think even the operations of our brain are in a way exogenous. I don't think we have control. I know that's another sort of difference between us, but still, it doesn't lessen the point in that we're forced to live in this alternate reality. What I would want to do is I want to bust up these companies and get some violent innovation going, because we need that to get through the great filter.
Okay, well, that's interesting, because that's where the other question that we wanted to talk about comes into play, which is whether there are business moats surrounding the development of AI, or whether there are centralizing tendencies to the creating AI. Like, the story that's been played for the past 2 years has been that centralizing force of AI is going to win. China and the United States are going to go to battle with AI, and AI is going to be the only thing that matters. But over the past 2 years, that goes into the other thing that we were talking about how getting things wrong is normal. About 2 years ago, when the COVID pandemic happened and the lockdowns happened, everybody thought that technology was going to win. All the technology stocks were going to win, and they did win under the same low rates as the previous generation, but as soon as those low rates went down, then they crashed.
Not before, they utilized that unlimited operating leverage to get economies of scale that would be unheard of by Rockefeller and his ilk, you know. And not only that, but we talked about the vertical and horizontal integration. That's no trivial point, you know. AWS being treated as a separate company from Amazon, so on and so forth.
But it's still within Amazon.
But it's still Amazon. Exactly. This idea that the antitrust law is exactly wrong. But to the point about the superintelligence or the artificial intelligence, China, U.S., delusion and nationalism. And a belief in myths, in money, and common beliefs, in the flag, those are adaptive traits from a group perspective. You know, that's group selection at its best. So I don't get me wrong. You know, I'm a patriot. You know, I want to beat the Chinese. The government does not care for our government. And I don't think that's a crazy thing to say. But I think that we're pretty ill-equipped in this fight right now, because, like I said, our preferences are frame bound, and we have our thing going, we have our corporate earnings going, and the asymmetric pain of losing is so much greater than that of winning, that we get are these little incremental, oh, the iPhone 28 is coming out. Meanwhile, China's like
very much locked into a long-termist perspective on all these things. They are conducting themselves in the best interest of the state, and we can disagree until we're blue in the face about the structure of their governance system. But certainly we are the outmoded one in this discussion, because we cannot align our nation's best interest with some of these developments that we're seeing.
You know, Steve Jobs, yeah, great. The phone looks clean inside too. Wow. You know, we need to continue. And the DoD has nothing. I mean, they're buying data from Google, for God's sake. I mean, it's like everything's backwards. And for folks to call it like a bleeding heart liberal thing to want to get antitrust updated, an actual
antitrust. That's because my understanding is that basically, like with COVID, every time the government now intervenes, it's for the worse.
Anytime a central agent, anytime the Fed intervenes, it's for the worse. You can't have a central agent try to control a complex adaptive system with innumerable agents acting on their own accord in unpredictable ways.
Yeah.
I mean, emergence comes from the ground up. It's the worm's eye view. It's not the bird's eye view. You can't control shit with the bird's eye view.
So, I mean, while your point is very well taken, and I agree with it, in most cases, I do think this is a unique scenario in which inaction from these agencies, you know, the DOJ, the FTC, I think inaction from these agencies is actually, it's allowing, well, we don't exist in a vacuum, right? So corporations have already poisoned the democratic process, and to not step in and rectify that poisoning is to allow for individual agents to control the collective complex adaptive system in the service of their own particular corporate interests. And I think, you know, to simply break companies up, that's a pretty minimal intervention. It behooves the competitive processes that are inherent to any capitalist system that is functioning as it should and generating innovative ecology for entrepreneurs and the like. So to act in this case is counterintuitively not an attempt to control the uncontrollable from the bird's eye view, but rather to allow emergence to take place from the bottom up. it's a move that's absolutely critical to allow free market forces to actually manifest themselves naturally.
We got to be on our toes here. I mean, I really think that, you know, this whole idea of parallelism, where, you know, we were sort of evolving sort of in line with the powers in our palms. Now we're really kind of setting ourselves up for this kind of like retrogressive evolution,
yeah,
where, you know, we have these, again, to mention the cognitive artifacts, we have the phones in our pockets. We're sort of offloading all of our memory, how to get to work.
this is actually interesting, because that I just read recently that actually process has been happening ever since the introduction of writing, and that people with oral traditions actually had impeccable memories.
Beautiful point. Yeah. And they stopped teaching cursive. You know, these are not these any functionality. The brain is built on redundancy, right? So, you know, these neural pathways are all over the place. It's not left brain, right brain, you motherfuckers. It's like everything is everywhere. Like you can't like just remove a discrete portion of your understanding. You know, you lose something. It's like that's why people like me.
You lose something, but then we also need to adapt, and so we've lost the ability to have impeccable memories, unless you're a crazy person and decide to do memory palaces and stuff like that.
Right.
But at the same time, the environment has changed so that somebody who is from a place with oral tradition, if you put them, you know, teleport them into the middle of New York City, they're completely lost and they're completely outside of their arena relationship.
There's no winning. Once the horse is out of the stable, you know, you can't be a Luddite. I don't think many people are consciously aware of what is at stake at this sort of fourth turning to take.
How far do you think we're in the fourth turning?
I'm waiting for the Molotov cocktails. I mean,
If it doesn't happen? What happens if violence as a symptom of the fourth turnings goes away? But instead, you just have what we're going through, which is intense emotional
turmoil for a large
No violence, no large scale violence like what we saw with World War II, just violence.
No, course, but and let's be honest, the 0.1% would take predator drones and smoke us all. But you know,
unless 3D printing, Urbit, decentralized computing, and AI doesn't have business.
Stu, I'll come to your crib, but we'll figure something out. But no,
we'll print our own drones.
I'm being tongue in cheek on that. But I do think that people, in fact, I don't think there will be. It's almost sadder
because now it's just disconnected.
People are just like broken dogs, man.
Yeah.
And
where at least before you had a, you know, kind of a clarion call where you could go fight the Nazis and, you know, have your war and stuff like that. Where it's like,
wear your medal, like, wear it home, and your wife loves you. And it's just like, you know, there's none of that. You know, now it's like, you know, you're scrapping to find something that's going to give you healthcare. And look, I'm just saying that I do firmly believe that this inflation stuff and the productivity, the GDP, things like that matter, and especially as China continues to accelerate in terms of their weapons capability, and in terms of the race to superintelligence. You know, I think that eventually that's got to get through people's heads and to me, climate change, those two things, because you just don't know when the runaway effect hits. But
so, I have a question for you based on what you just said, but that just reminded me of this book that goes into those exponential processes, Seven Eves by Neal Stephenson. Really interesting book about the moon just randomly gets blown up one day, and then all the rocks bash into each other and then cause an apocalyptic event on Earth due to these exponential things.
Sounds like something I like to check out.
Yeah, it's a pretty depressing book. I don't get depressed very often, or I don't get existentially into that zone much anymore, but that book brought me to the edge thinking about just the collapse of Earth. But And
I got one for you that might be more uplifting. It's called Rare Earth. And it's sort of a response to the Fermi paradox. This book is sort of a response to that paradox. And so it's super interesting just how the fact that we have tectonic plates that allow the Earth to breathe, fact that we're just the right distance from just the right size star, just the right age, the fact that we have a super gas giant in Jupiter that protects us from all meteors. it sort of sucks in any sort of world ending. I mean, the dinos got it bad, but you know, it's a pretty good goalie. There's just a number of factors there, but it's a great book.
And right now.
Yeah. And I recommend that strongly because the takeaway to me was religious, you know, secular, non-secular, I don't give a shit, dude. We have a moral obligation to persist. Anyway, man, I think I hit a lot. I definitely want to chat some more. I want to get out to see you. It looks like you're having a blast out there in the mobile cabin.
Cause I don't want to come back down from this cloud. It's taking me all this time. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't want to come back down from this cloud.